Hello, Senator.
There we go. I'm sorry about that. We're just going to stop so we can talk to you guys.
Oh, that's quite all right. Do you have Secretary Jewell with you in the car?
No, I do not. In fact, we just finished up our final meeting this morning and with the Federal Employees Executive Group, where they're trying to work on better coordination among all the federal agencies who are dealing with Bakken impact. And then she had an all-employees meeting, and she's up in the air, and I'm heading to Beulah.
Ah, wonderful. What was the purpose of this invitation?
Well, obviously, we want the federal government and the Department of Interior, both at BLM and the Park Service, plays a pretty significant role in federal mineral management, as well as issues that we're confronting in terms of getting easements for pipelines. We wanted her to actually see the landscape and see the challenges. But we also wanted to introduce her to a number of the companies that are working very hard on some of the issues that she's raised, which one of which is the big issue for her is the venting of natural gas, or what we call natural gas flares in Western
right.
North Dakota. And so I did have the distinct pleasure of being given a guided tour with her all around the national park. And so that was a particular opportunity for me to listen to the challenges that the Theodore Roosevelt National Park is experiencing.
What are those challenges?
Well, one is the view shed, obviously, Sandy. You know, you want to, when you go out there, you want to imagine what it was like for Teddy Roosevelt and imagine what it was like for the early settlers to come into this Badlands. And part of that is a view shed. And also, you know, there's just a growing interest in night skies and making sure that we don't have a lot of light pollution.
Right.
You know, and so what was fascinating to me is the park superintendent is keeping a pretty close eye on what those parameters are, issues are, and has gotten tremendous cooperation when the industry knows about the concerns, gotten tremendous cooperation in terms of accommodations, moving drill pads so that you don't have the impact and you don't have the view. This morning we talked a little bit about what happened up at the airbase. There was tremendous concern on the part of the Air Force as this development was, and I don't mean to use the word encroachment, but as it was coming closer and closer to missile sites, to the airbase, making sure that they had the ability to do their mission. Some discussion about how we could accommodate that same kind of kind of red zone around the park so that we could protect that resource as well. It was fascinating.
Was she interested to know how we're dealing with the flaring problem? I mean, what was it estimated? 3.6 million in natural gas burned away each day?
Yeah, and she was very interested. Interested from the standpoint of emissions, but also waste. And there is no one out here, and I can assure you of that, and there's no public official who is happy with what's happening in terms of the flaring of natural gas. And so we learned from Continental Resources that only about 10% of their gas production is actually vented or flared. The rest actually ends up in captured and moving through pipelines. Some of the other challenges for some of the more remote areas are, how do you build a gathering system that's going to accommodate huge amounts of gas on the front end with declining gas on the back end?
Right.
How do we get that done? And so we saw some temporary units, some liquid stripping units that take the liquids out of the gas stream. That can lower the kinds of emissions that people are concerned about and actually capture a very valuable resource. But one of the realities of all this, and the point that I made, which is, if gas were $10 an MCF, you wouldn't see it. And
right.
The problem is we have very low, it's not a problem, but the fact is we have very low natural gas prices, and so the economics of gathering become very difficult.
But you have to wait.
One thing I learned personally is not just the economics, but the actual physics of getting this high level of compressed gas captured is also presents a difficulty.
Exactly. And you have to ask yourself if we can have one without the other. I mean, can we truly achieve this sort of energy independence without the kind of impact it has on the environment? I mean, don't we?
Well, I think you can. I think you see it. I mean, let's take a look at back in the day when I was doing permitting, you know, when I was with the Industrial Commission, you know, these wells one-on-one-on-one, and you would see them dotted all over the landscape. Now we're seeing 14 wells drilled on one well pad. That's with a starburst pattern, you know, going 2 miles out. That minimizes the landscape impact. And so I think those developments are making huge, huge progress. That's huge progress for the industry. It's huge progress for the area. And I'm removing for a moment the socioeconomic impact of what's happening in the region. But yeah, I think that we're seeing accommodations, we're seeing improvements every day, and we're seeing an industry that very much wants to deal with this problem up there.
And we have, obviously, a lot of natural resources, the oil, the gas, and coal, to wind energy, biofuels. But there's a lot of disturbing news that's come out, particularly about coal. And I know I'm probably venturing into a subject that I might get a few emails about and maybe even a call or two. But the facts are the facts. And the facts are that people who burn coal have very high pollution rates.
Well, the one thing I will tell you is to take a look at what's happening, not just in our country, but globally. And I'm headed up right now because, you know, I'm very attached to Dakota Gasification.
I know.
Because it is such a great example of where we can take carbon and actually make it a marketable product in enhanced oil recovery, sequester it, do the kinds of things that we need to do to make that resource work overall. And the more that we can do this globally, the more we can develop these technologies and transport these technologies to places like China and India that are by and far the greatest current contributors to to CO2 emissions from the coal industry, the better we're going to be off. And this isn't just a unique problem to the United States.
Oh, I know it's not, but I'm just thinking about our backyard. That's what I'm focusing on right now. I mean, and I do know, I mean, I know what's going on around the country, particularly in China, but how long will it take for us to develop that kind of technology that we need to contain this?
Right now, SAFPower, and I've taken this on as my own little bailiwick here. SAFPower up in Canada is taking lignite generation, same as us, and they think they're realizing 100% carbon capture, that they can do that.
Wow.
Can it be done economically? Not yet, but as we know with technology, the longer we have the ability to experiment, the longer we have an ability to bring this into actual experience, the lower those costs will be. And so, you know, I would tell you that on the horizon, there is a real opportunity, and we cannot abandon the use of coal if we're going to have affordable and a reliable source of energy in our country.
Right. I hope it's in the near future, however, Senator Heitkamp.
Yes, ma'am.
I thank you very much for joining us. Next time, let's talk a little longer, maybe, and even have open phone lines, and maybe we'll even see you in person. We miss you here in the East. So,
okay. We'll be over there. We've got a couple weeks at home, and looking forward to getting together with you and Jack.
Very good. Senator Heitkamp, thank you.